This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Society question and answer session at PaizoCon 2018. Panelists are...
I'm John Compton, organized play lead developer.
Tanya Wooldridge, organized play manager.
Miss Teresa, I mean Thurston Hillman, Starfinder Society developer.
No Ruth.
Thanks, guys.
That was a pretty good panel. Yep. And we're done.
That's done. We're going to the bar. How many of you in here are actually playing Starfinder Society at present?
Like this
most of the room. How many of you want to play Starfinder Society but haven't quite gotten games going yet? Okay, so we are in our first season. We have not actually hit our first full year of Starfinder Society. That doesn't happen until Gen Con, but one of the things when we started planning out how we wanted to do this, we did a soft launch of one season, one scenario a month, just because we, getting into a second campaign, not quite sure how it was going to go, which led us to a very shortened season if we were to turn it over anytime soon. So the team got together when we were first planning out what would next year look like and said we want to do an extended storyline. Actually, I think Thirsty said something along the lines of, I'm not done yet. Give me more time. So what we are doing this year is instead of moving from season one to season two at Origins, which is our launch point, we are going season one to season 1A. This allows us to continue some storylines, move things on, and kind of tell a little bit more about the Scoured Stars, which is where we're at right now. This does lead to some questions about what does season 1A entail and look like. From an organization standpoint, it doesn't change a lot. In fact, we are not doing a guide update for 1A yet. And I caveat that because we have a few changes coming, which these guys will tell you in a little bit, that will necessitate us rolling out another guide somewhere in the September to November range. We kind of want to get out of the con madness season and let us all breathe and let our editorial and our design teams breathe a little bit and then go into looking at what changes we need to make. Some of those changes, you want to give some hints?
I think there's two starts with this one.
How many of you, see, we had this great list, and Tanya's already breaking
I'm already
it.
Breaking
She's already breaking it by throwing me things that other people are supposed to talk about, but I'll talk about because I love talking. let's talk about some of the guide update here and some of the things. One thing we have heard loud and clear in Starfinder Society is that people love all the alien species that are available to play, and the more of those we can get out there, the better it seems. We are still working towards that. One of our big steps in Guide 1.5 that we are happy to announce here is when that guide hits, all legacy races will be playable from the guide. So that will be one update straight out of the guide. If you've achieved those legacy races from other sources, you get a cool bonus, almost like we planned it that way. So that is one thing. Another thing that we'll be going on about, I'm just going to touch on this one right here. How many of you are GMing Starfinder Society here?
Close to
you. How many of you seen the boon yet?
Yeah, how many have seen the GM boon yet? Yeah. You'll be seeing it soon, but suffice to say, one thing that when we set up the guide at Starfinder Society was this idea that we have our main factions and you can sort of jump between factions. You're not locked into one. You can do a bit of stuff with the data files, move to the Inquisitives if you want to. What we also set that system up for was ease of introduction of new factions. And while we don't want to go down a long rabbit hole of introducing, massive new factions that expect support all the time, One thing we are looking at is the introduction of minor factions. Things that maybe only go up to tier 2 or tier 3 in terms of reputation tier, but they have their own unique boons. They pull some boons from different factions in the guide to sort of make their own list. And if you're GMing your, here and get the GM boon, you'll be seeing the first example of that out in the wild that is being released here at Pacifica.
And if we were to draw a Pathfinder Society organized play comparison, minor faction would be something like the Black Rose Museum, that sort of level, where it's something that we're ideally drawing from existing canon or introducing minor factions within our canon that we can explore a little bit more, but won't be front and center all the time.
Yeah, so we might end up doing more things with those, but it's going to be sort of a special once-in-a-while element. So the GM boon will be the first example of that here. One of the things we also recognized is, hey, you're coming to a convention like this, you're getting this cool thing, you're going back home. Wouldn't it be really neat if you could recruit people from your home area into these factions? And that is one option that comes with this boon as well. So you'll be able to take that boon back. You won't be able to recruit everyone locally, but you'll be able to bring another person in. So it sort of spreads it around. Along with that, and sort of going back to the guide update and why we pushed it off, is we want to get some verbiage into the guide at that point that really talks about it, especially after we've had some time to learn. And that guide will also see the introduction of a new faction. That will be a guide faction, and will have some important story behind it.
One of the things also it does is it allows us to be more living campaign feel, because we can put things in and out faster. If we're not having to wait for a season roll and a big change, if we're doing them little bits here and there. So it also, the GM reward has, for Pathfinder Society, traditionally been a race boon. And that has meant that we've kept a lot of things back because we've been waiting to give them to the GMs. And we're trying to do some other GM benefits to encourage that, because we wouldn't have a program without our GMs. But this allows us to get those races out there and maybe hold something else back.
Well, this is a Q&A. Do we want to take some questions first before we hit any
let's
other inputs?
Open it up to the floor.
What are you holding back?
What are we holding back?
Do you want to give a category?
Yeah.
Do you have an idea already as far as what you're going to hold back for GMs, or are you still working on that? Or?
part of this is we're looking at other ways of rewarding GMs.
Right.
Because once we have some sort of alternate reward, we have more flexibility with what we can do with a bunch of the new Starfinder races that have been introduced.
Right.
One of the things, too, is this GM boon won't just appear here at PaizoCon. It also will appear at Origins, PaizoCon UK, PaizoCon Oz, and Gen Con. So if you didn't sign up to GM here, but you'd like to GM one of those conventions, we could share you some people still.
And UK Games Expo.
And UK Games Expo.
And if you GM here and you get GM one of those other events, you then get more copies of that boon, which can then help recruit more players into the faction and thus continue to sort of spread to that, which is what we like doing, being like viruses.
So moving on from Thirsty's ominous statements. And with minor factions, this is something that we want to hear about how it works in the field. So this is a test run. Let us know what's good, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to see more of that would still fit on a Chronicle sheet, because we'd love to explore this more.
Can I make one? No. May there be opportunities for you to present ideas to us for some? Probably so. We've had a lot of success with some of the Pathfinder Society side contests and queries where you've thrown out a topic and said, hey, why don't you send us in your thoughts? And this might be one of those places that we can solicit that on the Starfinder side.
It was mentioned possibly changing the number of GM credits to get various levels of Novas. And of course, 5 Novas is currently not documented. Are there going to be any changes in numbers or 5 stars or 5 Novas introduced?
I think at this point in time, with the feedback we got when we asked, what do you think a Nova should entail, most people didn't see a difference in numbers. They were pretty comfortable with the same gap series. There were some questions about whether there should be a different adjudication element to it, if there should be some criteria for that. one of those concepts that we haven't quite gotten to where we need it yet, so we haven't quite put that on the top docket. A few other topics have kind of snuck into our team's focus a little bit more, but you have to come Sunday to hear some of those in the Pathfinder Society side of this. But I don't think we're looking at really changing those numbers per se.
Yeah. So the Alien Archive food for the races is valid until June 12th. Is there a plan to release a new version of that around that time, or is that not going to be a thing that is done?
We will be looking at that. There will be some. There are some other changes we're planning that will sort of take what's going on in Alien Archive, and we will be looking at it to how it will be playable, whether it will be either a new replacement boon at that point or more open items. You'll start seeing something like what we're aiming towards with the free RPG Day product.
Would you be able to make, if you made a new character once these minor factions are released, could you have that character completely dedicate themselves to a minor faction?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the way that these things, the way that this is written is that you can either apply to a current character or you can apply to a new character of yours, and just like a new character starts off with a faction champion boon for free, you can choose to have it be for this minor faction. Also, as Thirsty mentioned, a lot of our minor factions are only looking at going to tier 2 or 3, not all the way to tier 4. So that means that if you do dedicate yourself to it, you'll at some point surpass where there are ongoing rewards, but you can still totally own being a part of that faction. There are 4 tiers for each of the main factions.
I've been hearing a lot of people talk about how they wish that they could restat into one of the new archetypes from Back Worlds. Is there any plan to provide a mechanic where someone new has a character that's 3 or higher can do that in some way?
We haven't been looking at the rebuilding terribly much beyond what the demonic enhancer allows.
Yeah, and certainly I have noticed in particular that there are a lot of questions about that. As new content comes out, people want to be able to access it, and the demonic enhancer is our way of doing that, but I understand it's not ideal for every type of rebuild, so it is something we're aware of. We don't have any announcements on that front right now.
Speaking of some new content coming out, we've got lots of new content coming out, especially with the launch next month. They put paid and dusted the last bits on a couple of scenarios. In addition, our first interactive special for Starfinder, 1-99, is it an invasion?
Invasion.
It's an invasion.
Ooh.
Scour Stars. Yeah. Will be coming out at Origins. It will be a limited release until Gen Con. It's scheduled at a couple of conventions, and then at Gen Con, it will be open to anyone, 3 tables or more.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get it pretty widespread because we want you to play it in between Gen Con and about September, October, so that you guys can give us feedback, so then it can go into their storylines for further on into there. Again, trying to turn that reporting data around quickly so that what you guys are doing impacts the storyline of what we're producing in the timeline.
And it is a special that I will highly suggest, if people are following the storyline, that you'll want to get those 3 tables and participate in it. It will not be required, and we are structuring some of the following scenarios that the months after Origins will not immediately jump into a follow-up, and you'll be entirely lost on the story if you don't do it. However, if you go through the interactive special, it will be very, very important. And we will be coming up with some catch-up mechanics if maybe your region doesn't have an interactive special or you can't make it to one. There will be some information that we'll be getting out to people to cover that as well.
And we've got another new product for the RPG Day.
Yep. We do. Skittershot.
Skittershot.
Yep.
Which Thirsty developed.
Yeah, I did. I was actually the developer, not just like a society. I did a module. Crazy. So who here likes Skittermanders? Okay. You're still my friends. Yeah, so if you're familiar with our Weeby Goblins series of free RPG day products, Skittershot is a similar style. However, I will say that it is not quite as evil and malicious. Skittermanders are people who want to help out. They are all about finding people they have not met, who will be their friends, to the point that they call those people new friends right away from meeting them, because they know they'll be friends. And they want to help. And you'll see that as probably more of a natural fit to bringing people into the society than, say, Weeby Goblins, where, you know, you're riding a pig while setting a village on fire. That transitioning from that into Pathfinder society can be a bit jarring for people.
What do you mean? That's a natural tie.
yeah, fair.
Whoa, no. It's... Stop encouraging. Anyway, Skittershot comes out for Free RPG Day this year, which is June 16th. It is available through the FLGSs in hardcover form at that time. To stave off a question I've had already this weekend, will it be available digitally to prep ahead of time? We're discussing that. We would like to give more time than prep than just sitting down and you have to read the module and go into it. But we are constrained in that this is a Free RPG Day dissemination, not a Paizo-only piece. If we can't, it will be available from the FLGSs, the friendly local game stores, and then 2 weeks later we put it for sale at Paizo.com. And at that time, people go into those people that do get our downloads.
And just to clarify, it will be in paper version, not hardcover.
Oh, paper version. Yes, it is a sucker. You can tell I don't work on the book side of it. We also have a couple of other things upcoming.
Yeah, I can get into a little bit of that. Lucy and I are absolute jackals. We're not allowed to be in the same room alone.
That's why I work in Canada.
It's partly so that we don't come up with more plans, which, you know, ends up like designing the next four seasons all in the course of a couple hours. But what we tend to do is we tend to listen to a lot of feedback and then have heart-to-heart discussions of what we're interested in putting into these adventures. One of them that we have heard recently through Pathfinder channels is... You may have heard there's a second edition coming up for Pathfinder. Pathfinder Society is looking to see about tying up a couple of loose ends, and so we've been querying a bunch of the players and asking, what do you want to see tied up? And there's one in particular that's been coming up quite a bit that we were not expecting. We don't necessarily have a conclusion for it in Pathfinder Society, but I can tell you a working title for a scenario that's coming up in 2018 in Starfinder Society called The King Zerus of Star Aslant, which would be a blast. Other than that, though, the Starfinder Society has been a really cool opportunity to experiment with all sorts of different storytelling. Anything from live reality television shows.
That was all him.
to various galas and things like that, as well as even rock concerts, which is something you would not really see in Pathfinder Society. But it's also been a really cool way of exploring deep and difficult choices, because we've been going in with the recording system from day one, and we've been planning opportunities to respond to a lot of that reporting from day one. So, for example, there was a very early adventure that involved making a choice right at Gen Con 2017. And we have a scenario coming up at Gen Con 2018 that has almost the same title, almost as though it's a sequel, almost as though we read your reporting data, and we're really expecting the worst. And then realize you guys aren't complete jackals like us. So, kudos. But we've also been exploring this in terms of the infamy system, which we have loved. We have loved giving you opportunities to be utterly heinous individuals and award you an infamy point to track that. Most of you don't do it, and that's cool. But then, that really allows us in the scenario creation realm to introduce those choices more and more often and just see who takes them and provide an outlet for it. And we have a couple of ideas with that. Some of them are even tied into like prime directive level sort of thing, where it's like, okay, do we tell the aliens X, Y, or Z? But if we tell them X, Y, or Z, then they'll burn their planet down. But we'll get paid. We'll get paid more. That sort of thing. We loved those sorts of choices. And as an
as somebody who came out of archaeology and anthropology, I especially love these choices for Starfinder Society because it's, okay, are you ethical? What are the ramifications of ethics? What are the ramifications of ethics through the reporting system when we see what the entire world has chosen to do? And then what do those do for inspiring new scenarios? We love those choices. Please do fill out your reporting for all the scenarios because we're watching those and we're using this to try and feed off of your energy so that we can give you these continuations and sequels and other developments.
It also allows us to keep that depth of world because not everyone's black or white. It's not always good or bad. And this allows us to explore that gray area a lot more where we haven't before in Pathfinder Society. That is our question.
Yeah, just real quick, on the reporting for scenarios, is there a window like, you know, within the first 3 months, the first 6 months? Obviously, once you have a sequel written, the reporting on the original is less important. So just for like what we should aim for from a, I mean, obviously, once we run a scenario, report it, but if we're going to run a second session, should we try and get in a month, 3 months? Is that
question? It really varies by scenario, especially from the perspective of Pathfinder Society. Sometimes we put in reporting data that we, like, if there are A, B, C, and D choices, we might have something that we're considering for A and B, but C and D might be something we might follow up on one day, but we don't know yet. So, it's nice to play things within a couple of months. That's certainly lovely for us. We try not to do any sort of like reporting thing that would be, all right, play within a month or else you're out of luck. Because that's just not fair to the players or the GMs. So, yeah, it will vary by scenario.
I think the absolute lowest you would expect us to go would be like a 6 to 8 month window is when we would like follow up to start maybe assigning a sequel to an author. So...
Oh, as far as the production cycle? Yeah, and from the moment that we assign something, it's usually about, at this point, 3.5 months or so before it's released. So or we order it so that we can release it 3.5 months later.
Yeah, so I mean, we're looking at a minimum 6 month-ish. If we were to go at the tight end, 3 months to get data in and then 3 months to let the scenario percolate through. But we're following up on things in Pathfinder Society that are 7 years old at this point.
Well, as far as reporting data goes, more like 3.5, 4. Yep. But storylines, even that were from like season one, we might pick up little bits of.
So,
we love that content.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you so much for If You Want to Be Repeatable. Just like the shorter content, having that so people can make new characters and replay some stuff, maybe with new twists on them. But on that note, the reporting system, when can we get the Bane maximum fixed? Because I have a whole like stapled set of reporting sheets I have to go back to fix.
That is something that is out of our hands. Once we identify the problem, we have to file it down with our tech team, and they have to put it in their queue. And I would love to say our reporting data issues are at the top of the queue, but keeping the website functional and the store going are a little bit higher priority. So we have noted it, we have requested it. As soon as they can get it to it on their docket, it will happen. So
it is something we are definitely aware of. To sort of maybe spin a little bit off of that, taking it back to APs, certainly the upcoming adventure paths, I think we will be doing the same thing with our first adventure. I think we will look at keeping the first adventures repeatable, and then potentially looking at how that will work with something like our third adventure path, Signal Screamed, which is not starting at first level, and how that would impact having a repeatable if we wanted to have that not first level repeatable. And so that is something we're still looking at. I think we're leaning in some directions, but we understand that our player base really likes repeatables. I also think that a tier 3 to 6 repeatable would be really cool and might be something we have in the works.
Yeah, we've seen good success with 3 to 7, so
yep.
Let's One of the nice things about having the two programs and running both of them on both sides is we can try something in one and say, oh, that works really well, will it port over? Or we can go, oh, maybe we need to rethink this one before we start sending it across, you know, and populating it more. So everything we do, we really like the feedback on. We do try and read it from as many channels as we can get. You know, we'll sit on social media and look at the feedback there. We'll look at it on the forums. If we get the emails in, we read them and share them on the team. One of the things we try and do is we sit down for a couple hours every week and we just start talking about what's going on, what are we hearing from the field. Oh, I went to a convention this weekend, this is what I'm hearing, you know, and processing that, and each of us processing it from our different perspectives on the team and what we bring. To try and deliver the program. So if there's something you want to see, or you really would like us not to do, please let us know that, because without hearing that from you, we're kind of just creating, well, this is what we think we'd like to do, but maybe, maybe not, I think.
More questions?
Yep, did that elicit any thoughts? Yeah.
So I have a question. Are there any current plans to flesh out the vehicle section of Starfinder, because there's two pages and no construction information on the vehicles or their costs and values. And the ones that are there are only good for very low level things that they'll get wiped off the map later.
So I'm realizing that since we're doing various recordings, I should probably do a quick repeat of questions for those purposes. Will there be any fleshing out of the vehicles in the Starfinder Core rulebook? That is less of an organized play question for us, and more of a Starfinder developer and Starfinder design team one. Certainly they are looking ahead at a wide variety of different hardcover books that will continue to introduce more rules and more options. And I don't know whether Armory has them or not. That's not the part of the book that I've reviewed. I've been looking at these swaths of, like, how many tables of weapons are there in here? Oh, boy! As far as Starfinder Society goes, though, typically, and correct me if I'm wrong, Thirsty, when we have something with the vehicle tag, as you may see, is debuting at this convention, it's more of a, we're providing a vehicle, or yes, one or more vehicles. So, at least as far as those options are concerned, in organized play, you'll have the toys directly in the scenario. And it's less likely that you're going to buy a size huge police cruiser and drive it through live exploration extreme.
Was somebody did have a goblin junk cycle and wanted to ride it down through the streets of Night Arch to try and get to the place because they didn't have access to the buggy that they could have gotten.
Good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah. Me
too. Make a chariot.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine, Morty.
Wait, let me fall asleep. Alright, you guys can come up with some ideas. So, I mean, we will respond to whatever does get put on the docket to be able to include as much of that
sanctioning.
As we can.
Do we want to talk
about
sanctioning?
Yes, including things.
Let's talk about sanctioning. I have been doing my darndest to keep things sanctioned. I understand that we have fallen a bit behind with the Dead Sun's Adventure Path, and that was just a casualty of convention season in order to jump to two scenarios a month. I am happy to say that, barring a quick passover from John, hopefully, and one paragraph I need to tweak a little bit, Adventure 4 is ready to go, so we will have that sanctioned and with Chronicle Sheet. Yay. Adventure 5 and 6, I've actually done most of the legwork on. There are some other things that we'll be doing to make those line up, but I do want to get those done. Expect those to, I would say, shortly before Adventure 6 comes out, or around the same time it comes out.
I would expect them.
Yeah.
We are hoping to get the 5 and 6 before Gen Con.
Yeah.
4 is a shorter term.
4. Yeah. and we'll be looking at future products. The one that may take a bit longer compared to what you've seen in the past, like additional resources and sanctioning, will be Armory. We want to make sure we're taking a good look at that book, because that is going to be a lot of mechanics that we want to make sure will not have a negative impact on organized play. So as we always do, we will be working with some of our additional resources team and internally going through that to make sure the content in there is going to be all awesome and we can release as much of it as we can.
Yes.
New player, we'll be playing Starfinder, first time this convention. So thank you for that. The book's awesome. I'm curious, as many of the books do kind of parallel to Pathfinder, you know, Alien Icons, Bestiary, rather. Will we have more classes and archetypes in the soon in your future for Starfinder?
Again, so asking about whether there'll be new classes or archetypes in the near future. Again, that is well within design space land. And so I don't know that I really have any news on that front. I will say at the very least that archetypes and various like class options are way easier to introduce than a full class. But really everything that I've seen in terms of our publications that have come out down to the Adventure Path volumes and their back matter have had new character options in the back. So just keep an eye out on the various publications, and I suspect you'll see a steady release of that sort of information.
So from an organized play perspective, one of the things that I think I've really enjoyed about Starfinder in the first season is the Second Seeker's Tier 4 boon, where you know you too can be a part of the world-building canon.
Got my first hand in this weekend.
Yes. Which, that's impressive.
Yes.
So just for opportunities, you know, eventually assuming that the Scoured Stars incident is resolved in some sense of the word over the next year or so, like, does the long-term direction of the Starfinder Society depend on, you know, player write-ups? Like, I really think it'd be cool that, you know, that we go and hunt down the swarm. Mm-hmm. So now it's the year of the swarm and we're, you know, hunting the insectoids and, you know what I mean?
That is certainly part of the overarching reason we did the Second Seekers as a faction as we set them up, because we wanted it to be a faction that almost has more of a like player-led focus. Now, do we get the point where, you know, a player writes us a letter, says, I want the swarm, and suddenly we're doing the swarm? Well, that might be a bit more tricky, but player actions certainly matter, and as Tania mentioned before, we've had some really big success with opening some of that content up in Pathfinder Society with our contests and voting, and so there's a ton of room for that in the future.
Yeah, yeah. That level of like player agency and capability is super appealing.
Yeah, we won't know how it plays out or what opportunities we see until we get more and more suggestions. So we have one so far, and we'll likely wait until we have a number more. One consideration, though, that I would couch all of this in is that organized play also coordinates with all the other teams that are working on Starfinder. And so, for example, if we know that there is an adventure path coming up that deals with a certain concept, we're going to give them that space and look in a different direction. That way, we don't want to have it be so that all the new content coming out for something is dealing with the swarm, as an example. We want there to be options, so in case you do not like the swarm, then you can go and play something else.
One of the other pieces, too, is this has been the first year, so we kind of had to lay a lot of groundwork. I think with us, we've had some flexibility in 10 seasons of Pathfinder Society. We've laid that groundwork, and now we're able to tweak and play with storylines, and you'll see more of that as we get the Starfinder universe fleshed out.
I had a question sort of related to what John was just saying about canon. So Starfinder Society obviously introduces things in Starfinder. Starfinder is a much newer system than Pathfinder is. What kind of coordination is there between the Starfinder design team and the organized play team to make sure that there's consistency in the canon? So something that Starfinder Society introduces is not necessarily going to be contradicted by a book, or is that not something that...
That is something that absolutely happens. So to give some... pulling the curtain back on the metric. When we go through our outlining phase, as John mentioned, we will sit down and plan horrible, horrible things that happen to players, and then I will type those up. John will review them, add more horrible things. Eventually we tell Tanya about it. And then that goes to our creative director for Starfinder, Rob McCreary. He takes that outline and reviews it. And if he has any commentary or concerns, he lets us know. In several cases, I've even gone directly to the design team to say, hey, we have this random encounter style that we want to do. And they'll say, oh yeah, that looks cool, or maybe hold off because we don't necessarily have all the ground rules for that yet.
Or they'll say, hey, could you wait on this one for like 2 months, yeah, because we'll have a hardcover book that cover all the rules for turning PCs into ooze.
Yeah.
And then we can riff off of that instead of making your own subsystem.
Yep.
Nah, it's a vehicle chase, whatever.
I believe that we get the strongest organized play experience when we can go with all of our different teams in the office and we can get all of the different inputs. And so that's something we really, really try and work on as much as we can.
But also, this whole canon thing goes both ways. So, the Starfinder team will look to us and say, what have you guys introduced lately? And so that's where you'll see several bits of crossover, even like in Pact Worlds. There are several things that we've introduced in Starfinder Society already. They're in there. So we enjoy those crossovers.
And I think it's neat to watch Starfinder because of the nature of a universe versus the nature of a planet. There's a lot more grounds for being able to introduce some of those things and go a little bit wild, which is good for these two. Because we're not kept to quite the same structure that we need to keep to when we're on Valerian.
And as Thirsty and I oftentimes say, it's a big, big galaxy in so much as we can keep on making planets and we can fill it with the darndest things like psychedelic walruses. That's the sort of thing we could never really do in Pathfinder Society we want to go to a place with psychedelic walruses. We don't have that. Could we put them in Erison? No. Okay. Can we put them at Stop? And so, being able to just make a new planet and go there and say, it's somewhere in the vast. We took one of your 5 billion planets and put a name on it. Causes no trouble whatsoever.
And that works in a very nice way where if we find something that the player base doesn't respond to, we're not necessarily stuck with it by having it in the middle of a map that, oh, well, every other mission we have to cross through this area that no one likes. We can have control to go, okay, this maybe didn't work out. Let's not explore that anymore. The galaxy's a big place. Planets can just be forgotten about.
On the other hand, we have the opportunity to pick up on things that our players really do enjoy. So if you've seen the blogs that we've kind of teased what's going on at Origins, this thing called Star Sugar Heart?
That's here.
Right. I should know that. I'm going to go back to sleep.
We've saved a lot of really fun ideas for PaizoCon because we know that's where the people who are following things most closely and are most passionate are going to be. So, yeah, Star Sugar Heart Club is here, and also we're saving some Rencrotas, which is also great fun.
Yeah. And for Origins, we will also be having a really strong release with the sort of our first tier 5-8, the capstone to our ongoing Scoured Stars storyline that sort of leads directly into the events of 199, our first interactive special, also at Origins. Along with that, we'll be doing our second quest pack. We've taken a lot of feedback, recruited some crazy yahoos to write for it, and yeah, we're going to have a new quest pack. We're going to go down to 4 quests, and we're going to have just 1 starship combat in it. So hopefully that will help you when you go back to your local areas to recruit players and bring them into this universe.
Thank you from a VA.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Your phrasing there, just 1 starship combat. What's the feedback you've been getting?
About starship combat? It is varied. People tend to like it, they tend to hate it. We think we have a pretty solid mix in our original estimate, which is about, we aim for one in every four scenarios we'll have a starship combat. Yes, we maybe mucked that up last month in our transition to two scenarios a month, where you got two starship combats in a month. But overall, we think that that's a good level to stay at, is the one in every four. And we've been trying to vary up what starship combats are feeling like. And as we get more feedback and more players are playing that system, it really helps us tweak those encounters so we can make them enjoyable, even to the people who might not like the subsystem.
And 2 points. One of them is one in four is a target. And second, we also just consider what does the storyline call for? So if there is a really awesome opportunity to include starship combat that's going to be perfectly organic within the storyline and have some sort of cool twist on it, we might jump on it. So we keep our eyes open.
Speaking of starship combat, from an organized play perspective, I think one, you know, if everybody's in a starship and the starship loses, now it's difficult because either on the one hand, well, everyone dies, and sorry that you really liked that character that maybe wasn't built for starship combat, that is dead because you were in the wrong group. But so it takes away like individual characters' ability to influence their fate, as it were. I assist. Oh, the gunner missed again. But on the other hand,
try playing a bard.
Yeah, right.
I gave you +5 on everything. You missed.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, like, and obviously, especially at the beginning of at the beginning of Starfinder, the goal isn't, well, you've played 5 scenarios and now you're all dead, so back to level 1. But there, how do you incorporate negative consequences into starship combat without making starship combat, you know, well, but I'm now avoiding every scenario that has starship combat on the off chance that we run into the ship we can't beat and there goes 2 years worth of character building.
So we, if for pretty much all of the starship combats that we have in print right now,
yes,
generally there are some write-ups on what happens if things go bad for the PCs. And generally it's not just everybody dies. Generally, it's the PC's ship gets disabled and some sort of penalty happens or something that impacts the rest of the adventure, but the players can still move on in the scenario. A perfect example of this is the 1-13, which includes a particularly vicious starship combat, but there is some stuff in that starship combat intended to alleviate that concern of, we get blown up, everybody dies, sorry. I think what I'm aiming towards doing more with starship combat is some of those losses might impact things like, there might be a boon if you succeed that starship combat, and you might just lose out on a boon rather than your whole character if you lose that starship combat. Will there be cases where starship combats are going to be life or death? Like, yeah, if you're fighting a bunch of bloodthirsty devourer cultists who want to feast on your ship after they're done, yeah, you're probably not going to get out of that one okay, but we're not aiming to do that. Like, that will be the exception rather than the rule with how we handle those encounters.
In many ways, starship combat consequences are built the same way that social consequences are built in both Pathfinder Society and Starfinder Society, whereas, as you mentioned, you might miss out on a boon, you might lose out on some of the credits that you would earn, or there might be complications later, like, oh, now there are more enemies down the line, or we've missed out on some very precious time, and so therefore reinforcements, or what have you. We do look for those alternate consequences, but one day,
yeah,
we might have a, whoop, your ship gone, or even, hey, they blew up your engine, but now they're boarding you. Now you can handle it some different way.
So 1-13, by the way, absolutely loved it from GM side. My players hated it. Went down to 1d20 roll to save the entire party from a TPK. And the Starship Combat, they were running towards the escape pods, so kudos. Are we going to see more of that?
I think, again, that will be an exception rather than the rule. I will freely admit that while developing that, I am often a purveyor of our message boards. I will go on and I will see feedback. And around the time I was developing that, there sure were a lot of forum posts of, this game is too easy. My players are never challenged. So, okay, maybe we'll test some higher difficulty. It is not going to be the standard. We do not want a game where, especially because we're so early. I think 113 is a good example of something where we're putting a test step there in a lot of ways to see, like, much like in Pathfinder, so you know at certain levels you have to have certain bases covered. That's sort of the direction we're looking for in terms of what we're doing with difficulty.
It's a fine line of balance, making sure that there's that threat and that danger and that concern without killing characters, because no one wants to start over again, and especially when we do have a limited number of scenarios and we know there's only so many ways you can get there. The last thing we want to do is keep wiping characters and go back to Thirsty, we need another 8 tier 1s. So, you know, that is something there that we keep an eye on. And death is something that we can pull, again, in our reporting data if we need to see how bonekeepish, how deadly a scenario may be, and what we need to tweak. Any other questions? We have a couple more minutes before we need to up and vacate so that we can get the next
one. Is there any plans to resolve the claim to salvation storyline?
Oh, it's not a matter of resolving. It's a matter of continuation. So at this point we have two published scenarios about it, and we're continuing to explore more. Have you played the second of them? 109? Mm-hmm. Great. Then you know that there are avenues of exploration.
Yes. And I think we've already announced for Gen Con that we will have an avenue of exploration.
If we haven't, then I'm fine talking
about
it.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, we have sort of our follow-up scenario to our 103 at Gen Con. Well, the other scenario will be a follow-up, but, and this is a topic that comes up a lot as well, it's a continuation of a storyline with Claim to Salvation, and takes place in that area. However, it's a tier 1 to 4, so we understand that there are going to be people who have leveled out of that range by then, and it's important to note with several of these storylines, they aren't necessarily all meant to flow in a single order and be played by one character. Some of these, the story you're getting is intended at a level to be directive at the players, so that there is a more interesting element if you're not playing through it all as the same character. And what we'll be doing with Code of Salvation Gen Con will be an interesting example of that.
Any other questions? Comments? Yeah.
On the adventure records, the log sheets that you get, how come they always list items that you have access to already?
I'm gonna go back to infamy. Question being, why are there items that you always have access to on these crime sheets? Remember, infamy reduces your effective level for purchasing.
Okay.
We want to make sure that infamy, getting one infamy is not a death sentence. It's something that the campaign is built to accommodate is somebody who might be at one or two infamy.
Okay.
And so a level or tier 3-6 scenario might have a level 3 piece of gear from the core rulebook, even though, yes, a clean and sparkling Starfinder should be able to have access to that anyway.
And we're generally looking to reduce the lower numbers as we get into our higher tiers. Where people often give questions is in the lowest, like the tier 1-4s, I get questions of like, why is this like level 1 item here that's always available? Because at Gen Con, when we launched Starfinder Society, I had several players come up to me by the end of it saying, I've already got 2 infamy on my character. I'm so happy. It's like, you can't buy anything.
And to an extent, just from a newer player getting one of these Chronicle sheets, having a whole bunch of options in front of them is a good reminder of things that are out there. So, while I'm sure they've bought their first Azimuth laser pistol, they might not know that there was another first level option out there. That sort of thing.
Are there any plans to make items like exclusive that you need to gain from a Chronicle sheet?
We already have
several.
Yeah, numerous times.
Real quick, so Starfinder Society compared to Pathfinder Society, from a campaign feeling, seems more positive. We're out to explore and do good and establish peaceful relations, and Not that the Pathfinder Society has, you know, not that they're bad guys, but there's, I think, more moral ambiguity.
They have baggage.
Right, right. So is that intentional? And is that, just real quick, what?
This is the first time I've heard John and I's storylines be described as not player tier inducing. from my perspective, I certainly think it's important for us to keep a positive spin. And I think a lot of that comes through with the fan base and making sure we engage with the fan base so that this is something they enjoy playing. Did I get some quirky eyebrows around the office when I said we're going to have a scenario that's at a like sugar pop concert? And we have a lot of people who are like big fans of horror and H.P. Lovecraft, and they look at me like, why are we doing this
again? Nobody will ever play
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no one will be interested or ever want to play that. And sure enough, this is one of our big popular things. And I think it's about keeping that positivity up with the community so that, like, this is something we all enjoy. We should be going to the table to enjoy. Now, that doesn't mean we are not going to put your characters through the ringer in some situations, but there has to be a balance to that. And sometimes you just want to walk away from the table feeling positive.
And speaking of baggage, I would go back to the idea that we are checking reporting data. We are presenting some of these questionable choices. So if we start to get a lot of reporting data that say that Starfinders keep on throwing people under a bus, or whatever the heck we have in Starfinder for those purposes, well, we'll take note. We'll start to have more and more NPCs respond to the Starfinder Society not as happy, bubbly explorers, but as, oh, you've been in the news a lot. We're closed. Sorry. That sort of thing. So.
Because we've been able to create this campaign from the ground up, we've been able to keep that focus and that spin and that arc of where we want it. Pathfinder Society, with its 10 seasons, has kind of had its ups and its downs and its arcs and its pieces that we've incorporated, but not necessarily been the authors of. And so that kind of changes the feel as well, because we all inherited Pathfinder Society, where Starfinder Society, we can say it's ours. It's something we made. So I think with that, we just got the wrap-up signal from the back. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.